And as usual with Farmer Greg, we're over halfway through the conversation and not halfway through our talking points. So we're going to catch up on segment two, which was the principles of permaculture. We started with observation, and now we run into stacking functions.
Stacking functions is my favorite permaculture concept, and it's actually really not a permaculture concept. For those of you that don't know, I actually went back to college in 1999 at Arizona State University and got my bachelor's by 04. But one of the classes that I took at Arizona State University was a transportation planning class. So now, this was like in 2002. So 10 years earlier, I'd learned about stacking functions in permaculture. So I had a decade to kind of integrate that. Well, in my transportation planning class, he started talking about something called trip stacking. Trip stacking is the concept in transportation planning of you don't go to the drugstore and come home, the grocery store and come home, the pet store and come home. You do all three of them in a loop. Generally speaking, if you're going to go run some errands, you go run errands and do them in a loop. And it was like, for me, it was like, oh my gosh, that is stacking functions overlaid on vehicles. And that really started me thinking about all the different ways that we can stack functions and what that looks like and how to do it. And I've got some examples coming up. One of them, well, let's just jump into it. Stacking functions with a chicken. Okay, so this is our permaculture chicken conversation. And chickens and I'll ask you this, Romy and Gary, in our culture, in industrial farming, what do chickens serve? What do they do for us?
Boneless wings, breakfast eggs.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. Meat and eggs. And in some cases, I know Hickman,
Clint compost. Hickman,
Clint is using all of the manure for compost.
Right. That's the poop that comes from the chickens.
That is the poop that comes from the chickens. Mm-hmm. Actually, that's right. So that's what an industrial chicken is good for. Well, in my yard, we have permaculture chickens. And while they, we don't eat our hens, they're egg layers, they do give us eggs.
And most of your, I don't know a single commercial meat chicken that also is an egg-laying chicken.
Correct.
They're completely separate breeds. I mean, there's hundreds of breeds of chickens.
Yes, and exactly.
They've got the ones designed to, lay an egg a day, and we've got a lot of those varieties, and then you've got the meat ones. So it's
right.
Those two functions don't stack.
Correct. And interestingly, so I'm not a vegetarian. I'm mostly vegetarian. And about 15 years ago, I decided that I was going to figure out what it took to raise meat chickens. So I went and got some, I did a little bit of research and I went and got some meat chickens. And a meat chicken is a chicken that goes from, little peeping chick to the table in about 8 weeks. They grow that fast. It's amazing to watch them grow. I don't do that anymore, but I did experience that process and I learned a lot from it. So, but back to stacking functions with my chicken. Go ahead.
I'm with you. We did that a couple times and like, okay, been there, done that.
Yeah.
Move on.
Well, and for me, if I do go for chicken, I'm willing to pay $25 for a meat chicken because I know what it takes to do them organically and, in a small crop. So it gave me that appreciation. But let's go back to what the chickens do in our backyard. So they do give us eggs. They are great tillers. They eat bugs. They eat weeds. So basically we have this one hen that does all of that. They give us poop every day for our compost bin and building healthy soil. And they happen to be Heidi's pets. So when Heidi goes out to the backyard, she goes out and visits them every day. They come running and they'll jump in her lap and so permaculture chickens do a lot more than just give us eggs.
And see, I'm sure Heidi has names for them.
Yep.
And,
named them all.
And that may sound funny, but you never hear about a crazy chicken woman. You hear about crazy cat ladies all the time. You never hear about crazy chicken women.
There you go. Well, Heidi doesn't qualify for the crazy part.
No, I'm saying, that's what I'm saying. That doesn't exist.
Oh, yeah,
if you're
right.
Living in, you know, and you're the homesteading and you're growing, you know, that crazy element doesn't exist.
Yeah.
I was saying she's the opposite of crazy.
Oh, there you go.
You don't hear about them because they don't exist.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So that stacking functions, and I really challenge you to see how many places in your life you can stack functions. Here's another one. I still have an evaporative cooler here on the urban farm. I love my evap cooler. I use it for about 4 months a year. It saves me hundreds of dollars every year in electrical costs. Plus, I like the moist air, and it runs off water. You know, there's a stream of water that comes off the evaporative cooler. And what I have done in the past is that stream of water is used. Use number one is to cool the air in my house. Use number two goes into the fish pond. And in the past, in the way past, I've raised fish to eat. Now it's just a nice looking fish pond that I grow some plants in. And then the water from there goes into the gardens to water the gardens. So basically I took that water and I used it three different times. So again, that's another function of stack, or another way to stack function. So I just really challenge everybody out there to look at an asset. An asset could be water, it can be a chicken, it can be your car in the process of trip stacking, and see how you can start stacking functions in your life to make things more efficient. And then there's a bunch more principles. I'm just going to throw them at you because I know we don't have
rifle around.
Yeah. So work with nature is the next one. And these are in no particular order. The problem is the solution. You've heard this one before, is you make lemonade from lemons. We're always looking for that in permaculture. Make the least change for the greatest effort. No, other way around. Make the least change with the greatest effect. So this is our lazy gardener coming in. And this is at the beginning of the show, you said something about, so we can set these up so that they self-maintain. That's really what we're trying to do. In fact, what I've done here in 32 years at the urban farm is I've created what is called an old growth food forest. So I let things go to seed. I let the regenerative process of nature happen in my yard. So at any given moment, I have carrots, parsley, oregano, basil, lettuce, kale. The list goes on and on and on about things that just come back in my landscape year after year after year.
And that took a lot of years to get to that point.
It did.
You know, this isn't something you're going to do overnight, but
right.
it makes the reward so much better when you get there.
Exactly. And, you know, I've had people ask me, how long does it take? Well, it took me 30 years. But it doesn't have to take 30 years. If I was going to do it again, my system probably would take about 4 years to get it set up, because I have 30 years of knowledge, 30 years of study, 30 years of designing with nature. Now I know how to do it. And I don't completely know how to do it. And if I moved someplace else, I would actually, that wasn't the low desert, I would actually hire somebody to come that knew the climate that I was moving into, to help me do it, because I know desert, you know, I know drylands. I don't know forests of Washington or anything like that. So, but it's still, I could do it. And, you know, I could do an edible design in 3 to 5 years.
And you talked about, you know, you don't do the aquaponics anymore, the fish. You don't do the bird harvesting. So experience isn't all just figuring out what you like. It's figuring out what you don't like and realizing that I don't mind paying for a great chicken somewhere else, because that I don't enjoy raising them here. So
exactly.
You know, it's what you do like and what you don't like.
Well, and so, you know, I was having a conversation with somebody the other day, and I've had over 30 businesses in my life. Two of them lasted over 20 years each. This is one of them. And I've had probably 30 to 50 jobs I had a job that lasted 2 hours. I had one that lasted 2 weeks, and I had, you know, I had one that lasted a year. And each one of those were learning experiences for me on what I did and didn't like. And that's really, as human beings, that's what we need to be doing on the planet. I'm preaching now, I know. But that's what we need to be doing. We need to go out and discover what we love to do. And the only way to do that is to jump in and try something. And sometimes you'll fail. That's okay. Sometimes you don't like it. That's okay. Do something else. Now you know what you don't want to do anymore. Anyways, that's why I love permaculture, is because it's, you know, it's this, all of that that I was just talking about, that's permaculture. It's working with nature.
And looking at the final quick points here, you're talking about everything gardens, build diversity, observe and respond, build small scale. Those are all permaculture principles, and you can find those in the radio archive page today. We've got a few minutes left here to fit in what we were supposed to be talking about in the third segment anyway, but that's the great thing. It's not scripted, and we've got time
lots
to dive
to
into.
About.
Yes.
So one of the things that you just read, Romy, was under the permaculture principles is building diversity. And, you know, culturally, what we have done in the food system is we have decreased the diversity to make things more monoculture. And, you know, so in the grocery store, I think one of the most prosperous things in the grocery store, the ones that we can find the most of, are apples. You know, we can find probably 15 or 20 different varieties of apples over the course of a season. Guess what? There are over 2,500 apples that are grown on the planet. And in fact, one of the reasons we have 2,500 varieties is because of Johnny Appleseed. He was actually a person, and what he used to do, and I think it was, I can't remember the years, but I think in the 1700s, is he would go ahead of civilization. He would stop at the cider mills, buy seeds, and go ahead of civilization and plant the seeds out. And what that did is that gave us an amazing amount of genetic biodiversity. So part of what I've done here at the Urban Farm is I've created a genetically biodiverse space by planting, and we talk about this in September, open pollinated seeds. Open pollinated seeds are not hybrids. They're not genetically modified. Basically, they're a land race or an older version of seeds that basically replicate themselves over and over again. So everything I've planted here at the Urban Farm has been open pollinated so that they reseed themselves year over year.
Now, on the seed packaging, will it say open pollinated, heirloom?
Sometimes. Our job as seed hunters is to make sure that we're finding, you know, open pollinated seeds. And at the Great American Seed Up that we do every year, every October, all of our seeds are open pollinated. So it takes a little bit of research, but I'm a big proponent of that.